There we go.
At least Joe knows how to do this. Thank you.
You guys need a carpet in here to absorb a little bit of sound.
Yeah, really.
You know,
it's pretty good that online.
This whole room.
Yes. It's you know, I hear every burn Twitter and every little scrape of everything, and it doesn't stop me, but not quite as
much. It could be better.
Yeah, it could be better. It's okay. It's just
you don't have carpet.
Okay, no, okay.
Because you got to do a sponge off.
I know. We can always.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
If we stop talking, it'll make that easier.
That's right. Does it start at 10 or when?
No,
9:45.
Ah, okay. Well, let's get started then. Okay. Do we press? Have I?
It's on.
It's on already. Well, I guess I should introduce myself to some of you who don't know me. My name is Lois Tverberg. I come from Holland, Michigan, and I bring greetings to you from the Holland, Michigan Narkeese diaspora, which does include Keith and Laura Blystra, who I originally met here at Narkeese 5 years ago. I had never met them before, and they look so Dutch, and Holland, Michigan is this land full of incredibly blonde Dutch people, and then when they moved back there, they fit so well. So, but we now.
But your name doesn't have two vowels in it.
They let me live among them. I'm a Norwegian that lives among the Dutch people. I don't know how that works. But we have, I feel closer to you even now because Keith and I and a few others have been studying the Parashat HaShavuah some weeks, many weeks, and we've been reading it in Hebrew and working through that, and so I feel like we're a little closer. I feel like there's some kind of time-space continuum connection between us, so. I think, well, yeah, you know, I am a writer who has gotten my start from learning from Randy and David, and I have loved to study about this, and so I brought some of my books that many of you have seen before, but if you really would like one, I am giving them if you would like.
Oh, yeah?
For free.
Just this morning. I am not as David says, make... use unrighteous mammon to make friends in the world. Something
okay,
like
I take
that.
Five.
There we go. So, one thing that some of you might have is the first little book we wrote was this called Listening to the Language of the Bible, and it has these little short meditations on Hebraic ideas and words, you know, like that levav means not just heart, but mind. Like what Jordash talked about.
Cool.
And then I wrote a Bible study that goes with it. So some of you might actually have this one, but not, this is a Bible study that goes with it. So I brought those along. We can do that later, but I just wanted to share greetings and gifts. And then I think we should ask the Lord to come and be present. He already is, but help us realize and hear him speaking. So, Father, Lord, King, we praise and bless you for a Shabbat. And I am praising you for being with my dear friends here among here at Narkeese. We lift up your word today, and we praise you, and we ask for you to speak through us now and together and in many days to come, even from what we learned today. May your glorious name be praised. Hashem Yeshua.
Amen.
Amen. Okay. I sent Gary a handout that I was expecting. Have the Allies arrived yet? I thought they have not. So sometime throughout, I assume you might get a handout from this. What Let's see, how can I get started? I should explain that my writing has gone along a certain theme. My first, after this book I just showed you, the book, kind of the big first book that I really wrote, it wasn't just a collection of essays, was called Sitting at the Feet of Rabbi Jesus, and it was about his Jewish context, rabbis and disciples and various things about his external milieu that help us understand him. Then I wrote another book, it's called Walking in the Dust of Rabbi Jesus, which is about his words to his disciples in their Jewish context. So I'm pushing a little harder. You have to understand him in his Jewish context. Shocking. Well, the next book that I'm working on is called Reading the Bible with Rabbi Jesus. I'm still working on it right now, and it's a project in the works. And the big question that I could not avoid is ask, how did they read their Bible in the time of Jesus? Obviously, you go and start. And the very first day when I said, well, let's go study this in among the scholars, I got stopped by a fascinating observation that I wanted to share with you folks, especially those of you who have been studying the early rabbinic literature and have some. And if anything, what I want to do is not so much teach you information as much as ignite an interest in the same subject, so that it's like there is a rabbinic line that the Talmudim, the beginning students, are like kindling, and the scholars are like logs. You need the kindling to get the fire started, and then the scholars take hold of it, and then they go they're the ones that develop the ideas. So what am I talking about here? I'm talking about how were the scriptures read in the synagogue in Jesus' time. And obviously it's related to the way they read it today, with the Torah portion read and then the prophets read. How many of you have been a part of reading through the parasha? Okay, everybody. Okay, so yeah, that's part of the reason why I wanted to speak to this crowd, is you're very familiar with the annual cycle. It goes through the Torah, and it aims to finish every year the same time. And so the first thing that you do after the fall feast is you celebrate Simchat Torah, you roll the scrolls back, and you start over again, right? Well, one of the observations in one of the ancient early commentaries, they were talking about the difference between Babylon and the Palestinian in the first few centuries BCE or AD, is they said, in the land of Israel, they do not celebrate Simchat Torah every year. They celebrate it every 3 years, and every village celebrates it at a different time. And so it tells us that there was a much more ancient cycle of reading going on, and it varied somewhat from town to town. And what's the most interesting thing about it is that the prophetic reading in this cycle was very much focused on the coming of the messianic age, the kingdom of God. And so they said it's fascinating to hear how strong this more ancient Torah reading cycle is compared to ours today. It has a different theme about it. It's much more focused on how will God reestablish, you start with the Torah portions in Genesis that tell about the creation of the world, and in the Haftarah readings, you read about the world to come. So there's a fascinating interplay between them. And what's fascinating is that both, you can hear some of them coming out in the New Testament. There's a sense that people tend to read the Torah through the eyes of the prophets. They have there are certain verses that are traditional. And you also hear this in all of the early Midrash. How many of you, I was told, I think Brian Kvasnik said that they were reading some of the, you know what I'm talking about? So, not everybody, okay. The earliest rabbinic commentaries on the books of the Bible, the Torah portions, are the Midrashim, the earliest, the Mechilta, is that right? Okay, Sifrei, those all presume to this older, earlier lectionary cycle. And so many, you'll find a lot of sermons, commentaries, all based on this older, more messianic reading cycle. And that's what I find interesting.
Interesting in that they were sort of focused on a messianic theme?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. And trying to decide whether I should. And part of what was interesting, and I'm going to add this in as an aside here. We will come back to it later, I think. Is that I bumped into an article online. It was in Haaretz, and it was, I don't know if you can see this, what happened to Jesus' Haftarah? And this is talking about the annual cycle and the Haftarah readings that we read now. This was from about 10 years ago. Hananel Mack, who is in Tel Aviv, a scholar, he presented a paper saying that when you look at the annual Haftarot, you can see that there is a, it says, a perusal of the list of Haftarot read today reveals that the chapters that Jesus recited are not there. And in fact, there's a trend throughout them is that any passage that is overtly Christological has been removed. Ouch. And so.
And this is they're comparing with what?
This is the annual. This is the one that you read right now. And so, you know, that's one thing that Christians quickly notice is that you're reading along, you read Isaiah 52, and then jump, you go to Isaiah 54. That's obvious to everybody. But he actually goes through, let's see. Okay. Here. I'll just read. Yes. Okay. Okay. Let's start back here. First, he talks about Isaiah 61:1, which is in the Luke 4 passage, and people say, well, where is that in the annual portion? It's not. It's not in anywhere read right now. And then he said, let's see, an additional perusal of the list of Haftarot read today indicates that we're not dealing with an isolated incident, but a general trend. Generally speaking, Jews excluded from the Haftarot those verses on which passages on which Christians base the principles of their religious faith. Thus, all of the customs related to Haftarah readings omit the passage in Isaiah that says, behold, a virgin will conceive and bear a son. And, okay, here we are. We'll get those. Another one is, Isaiah 52:13. which is really the beginning of the Isaiah 53 passage. You won't find any of that. Hosea 11:1, when Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Micah 5:2, about, you know, the king, the shepherd who was born in Bethlehem. Mm-hmm. None of them are in there. And it's kind of obvious that I should say that the Haftarah readings out of the prophets are a selected portion of texts that are read in the synagogue with the Torah. You don't expect them to be trying to read all the way through. So you don't expect that they're going to. So you can't say for sure, yes, that we're trying to, and then we skip over it. But he's pointing out that it's an obvious enough trend that it's clear. So that's part of why I'm.
So what one is saying then is that the Haftarah passages which we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And which omit what you call the Christological,
mm-hmm.
the Jesus references, if you like,
mm-hmm.
they were actually formed or formulated post Jesus.
Yes, yes.
So that
right.
they were clearly the writings that we know Yeshua used
mm-hmm.
were clearly around at that time without anybody getting worked up. It's only when the church gets established and presumably the whole Jesus thing gets
mm-hmm.
up the noses of the Jews
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
we reorganize the Haftarah, which makes a lot of sense.
That's true, exactly. And you can tell the time at which the change occurred in the Babylonian Talmud. There are many, many references to the annual reading cycle. In the Jerusalem Talmud, there are no references to it. So it's about 500,
right. 600. Can you say that one more time?
In the Babylonian Talmud, there are many references to the current annual cycle.
Yeah.
In the Jerusalem Talmud, and the Mishnah and the Tosefta and all the, you don't find any references to the annual cycle. It's all triennial cycle. There's this earlier assumption. So the oldest literature is always talking about that.
The interesting thing is if you look at the reverse and you look at current Christian church cycles, either Anglican or Catholic, where they have cycles,
mm-hmm.
there is a complete lack of anything to do with Israel, the return to the land, the promises to Israel, so on.
Yeah.
So in a sense, you know.
Yeah, we kind of, exactly.
Omitted each other.
Exactly. Yeah. We both did exactly the same thing, and I found that ironic, and it's kind of a healthy thing to know when you're studying your Jewish roots is that do realize that there is a discussion going on here, there's omissions going on, and that things that we don't see today, that doesn't necessarily mean that they weren't there earlier. So, one other thing I saw, I believe it was in an article by Petra Helt originally. She pointed out that in the blessings after the Haftarah, the one that they use today, listen to this prayer that comes after the reading of the Haftarah. It says, Lord our God, make us joyful through the coming of thy servant Elijah and through the rule of thine anointed of the house of David. May his early advent gladden our hearts. Listen, suffer no stranger to sit on his throne, and let others no longer possess themselves of his glory. For by his holy name hast thou sworn to David that his light would never be extinguished. Blessed art thou, Lord, shield of David. You can hear there's a anti-Christian little zinger in there is that don't let anybody else sit on his throne. And it comes right after the reading of the Haftarah. So, a very interesting trend here. It's telling you that there has been a shift. And as they developed the annual cycle, that was part of what was going on.
It's interesting that they have this messianic kind of blessing after the Haftarah reading when all the messianic type stuff has been actually taken out. So, on one hand, this isn't messianic in focus anymore, and yet people still have this kind of closing prayer, like maybe a remnant or something.
If anything, it's a reaction, and thank you know, it's and quit and reminding them of that exactly. Gary, did you make any copies of the handout?
Yes.
I've been waiting for that. So.
Sorry. Could print it. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The other thing in the same ilk,
yeah,
is that I only discovered this year that in the Haggadah for Pesach,
mm-hmm,
there is almost no mention of Moses.
Exactly.
And that's the same principle, that we don't want Moses turned into some sort of Mashiach.
That's right.
Character.
Because God does not work through a human, and that's why we don't mention Moses
that's
in
right.
the Passover.
Even though before it was all, the Messiah yeah. come will be like Moses, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
I have a question
yeah.
for you.
Yes.
Is yes. there any way that we can find out what the triannual cycles were, or is it only kind of embedded in the Midrashim, like you said, and you have to kind of...
Great question, and that's what the handout has. There have been, that has been an ongoing discussion, yes.
The Messiah is coming.
That's it, there you go.
And he's bringing his handouts.
And the handouts are coming with him. But I want to point out, I'll point this out just because it's interesting. The Haftarah that is in the annual cycle, for Vayera, which is the story of the binding of Isaac, and you know that very old tradition about, and it mentioned in Hebrews about that Abraham received his son back from the dead. You know, you've heard that. That's fairly old tradition. Interestingly, the Haftarah portion is 2 Kings 4:9. That's in the modern. That's about the Shunammite woman whose son is raised from the dead. But right now, when you read it, it stops immediately before her son is raised from the dead. Part of the reason why is because there is latitude of where you start and stop, and the easiest way to edit a passage is simply to stop before you get to that point. So you see that as a general pattern. So, I didn't really want to start out on a grumpy anti-Jewish point here, but it did raise a question is, so what's going on here and where are these changes and what can we see if we go to an earlier, older passage, set of Haftarah readings, okay? So we're waiting for those even now. Questions, comments?
No, I was talking to a guy a while back, and he said that this is because I was talking about the prophets.
Yeah.
My son is named after a prophet.
Yeah.
And he said the rabbis say that you can only find God in Holocaust. The prophets are a waste of time.
Mm.
So it appears to me that mm-hmm. Christians have gone towards prophecy
mm-hmm.
because it supports their faith.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
the rabbinical Jews have
yeah.
gone towards Torah,
yeah.
you know, to build the Holocaust,
sure.
these kind of things.
Yeah,
but
sure.
what's interesting is that if you try to combine the two, if you say there's value in both,
yeah.
the rabbis say, listen, if you're not in our group,
yeah.
you can't keep the mitzvah.
Sure.
It's forbidden to
sure.
keep the mitzvah. You have to break Shabbat.
Sure.
Even an animal gets to keep Shabbat. But a person who's not
in your group can't
keep Shabbat.
That's a good point. Very interesting. Yes, I agree. That's true. There's a greater emphasis. Conversely, when you think, and I notice this especially in Luke and Acts, one of my favorite places to read in the New Testament, is you find that when Jesus is speaking about the scriptures pointing towards him, they'll talk about Moses and the prophets speak of me, if they have Moses and the prophets, and at the Emmaus when he says, and he picks Moses and the prophets, and then when Paul speaks, he uses the same thing. So let's look at some of these. I feel like I'm depriving you of actually reading. If we open our Bibles and start reading some of these, the older versions, put your finger... okay, I bet everybody knows where Genesis 1:1 is, so we don't have to go there. But let's look at the oldest, the older Haftarah reading for Genesis 1:1. it is Isaiah 65:17. What's our time? What time am I supposed to
get?
No, but what time are they supposed to get done?
20, max 25 minutes.
Okay.
Including discussion.
Okay, and we'll have, that's good. Okay. Isaiah 65:17. It goes through 25. There you go. Or if you want the top mark is 2. Okay. Notice the parallels between Genesis 1 and Isaiah 65:17. Especially the very first line, when they choose Haftarot, their favorite thing was to grab hold of a theme or a few words in the first line and repeat them. For behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem to be a joy and her people to be a gladness. I'm going to kind of... roll down a little bit. To verse 23, they shall not labor in vain or bear children for calamity. I'm going to skip a couple verses up. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They'll plant vineyards and eat their fruit. You know, a lot of this, when you're thinking back to the creation story, you hear it as a reversal of that. The curses are being reversed here. It's not that Isaiah is written as a commentary, but he's so aware of the creation story. It is reminding you of how in the world to come, God is going to... at the resurrection, this perfect world will be like a creation again. And you keep hearing this theme, especially coming up in the first few chapters. So, but yet, look at this at the verse 25. The wolf and the lamb shall graze together, the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and dust shall be the serpent's food. You can hear that, you know, we've got this perfect thing, except for snake is still eating that dust, as he should. So you can definitely, I can see why they liked Isaiah, and they liked to notice how Isaiah was reading Genesis. That's the kind of thing, I've had the most fun time reading the prophets as I have been reading my Torah portion.
Louis, that was great. Can you tell me where does that come from? Is that from Bereshit Rabba, or where did you find that mm-hmm. that was the Haftarah?
Thank you for... we're still waiting on our... I can give you my sources. The fact that they're... The lists of those were completely unknown until the discovery of the Cairo Geniza, is that right? Mm-hmm. In 1896. And it was in about 1940 that there was a book that came out it's by Jacob Mann. It was a little bit sketchy. His research, he did a lot in order to bring together all these readings, but it was a little speculative. And then there was also very quickly this theory that we could map out the triennial cycle and it would tell us exactly what time of the week and what time of the year everybody was reading so that you can pick up your Gospels and then read Jesus' life through that. There were, I think, at least 3 books that came out. The Christians grabbed hold of everything about it that was speculative and then went off on speculation land, and so I have been trying to avoid that. But the place where I am printing off my list was Mikra, from the Novum Testamentum, the big... the Fortress Press texts, you know what I'm talking about? It's that big fat whatever. I have a couple sources that list the best known texts. That was a very long answer to that question. I can give you more sources. The way they found them was from the Cairo Geniza. They found lots and lots of little snippets, pieces of where they had made the lists of what they had read. And they also found that there were ancient poetry from about 400 or 500 AD. It was part of the singing after the services where they would combine the Torah and Haftarah back and forth. And it was always in Hebrew. I thought that was interesting. People love listening to this.
What I learned from Professor Safai Shmuel,
yes,
is, and this has to do with Jesus, Yeshua's reading in the synagogue in Nazareth, and he, and I think Hannah also, they said it was a triennial cycle, and there was just one reader, not
right.
several.
Yeah.
And the person who read the Torah could choose his portion from the from the prophets. It wasn't
right.
It was triannual yeah. for the Torah, but
right.
but the Haftarah
right.
wasn't
that's right.
Fixed.
That's
so,
right.
So that's right. what we see Yeshua
that's
doing in the
right.
synagogue in Nazareth.
Yes.
He chooses.
That's right.
He reads the Torah because it said he stood up, and
yes.
then he reads from the that's telescoped, and then he reads okay. from the prophets, and he chooses one that
yes.
gets his message.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Actually, thank you for pulling me into. That's one of the points is that the prophetic readings were not. They were not a set lectionary, as you said. They were under the. They could be chosen by the person reading, but there's a way of choosing it. Usually, the first line is repeated, so you're constrained when you have read a Torah portion. Thank you. That the line in the Haftarah reading is going to repeat some words or theme, and then. It will be about 10 lines long, and it will end on a happy note. There's plenty of prophetic readings that do not end on happy notes. If you go about 10 lines, you're going to get right into some kind of... So they have to be... And then the whole thing is has some kind of beautiful lesson that is a take on the... one of the things that one of my articles said, they said, these obviously were being formed... in the land of Israel, most likely the Galilee area, Tiberias, some of the rabbis in that area, they said it was incredibly impressive that these people had to have a near total recall of their scriptures to be able to take a few words out of the Torah reading and then boom, pull a beautiful lesson that starts with the same few words. And so and then they also said they were amazed at the sophistication of these readings. They weren't just simple. You could see these beautiful lessons coming in. Let me find that one that I have seen here. Okay, hang on. Here's one of my main sources. You recognize the name Benzion Wacholder?
Wacholder.
He was Marty Abig's advisor. He wrote... And he was blind.
He was blind. Oh. He knew all scripture by heart, everything by heart.
I bet he did. He wrote... It's called the... He wrote a prolegomenon... for this book by Mann that details all of the triennial haftarot, where, and this was published in 1971, where he's correcting all of these readings. Mm. And he lists them in the back. But he, here, let me show you one of them that he was very impressed by. Let's see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Here. Okay. Okay, look up. Exodus 38, 21. Wait, let's see, just a second. Is that it? Okay. Oh, and actually, I'm going to do a different one. No, that's okay. This is fine. This is fine.
Exodus
38:21.
Yeah.
Number 72.
Okay. Okay. Exodus 38:21 to. Let me see. Jeremiah 30:18. Oh yeah. Okay. This one's not. It's nice. It's nice. Let's see. What does Exodus 38:21 say? I think it's a...
This is the inventory of the tabernacle.
That's exactly right, yeah.
The tabernacle of the testimony, which was counted according to the commandment of Moses,
yeah,
for the service of the Levites by the hand of Itamar, son of Aaron the priest.
Okay. And so, but in Jeremiah 30:18, let's see, what does that say? Give me a line out of there.
It says, the Lord, I will restore the fortunes of Jacob's tent, have compassion upon his dwellings. The city shall be rebuilt on its mound and fortress in its proper place.
So the word, the link there is the tents, is the inventory of the tents, and it's saying, what ultimately will God do with these tents? He will restore the fortunes in the tents of Zion. So that's kind of a, that's a nice, that one's not a much of a lesson.
Again, focused on the kingdom.
The world to come, yeah, exactly.
It's also interesting, yeah, wording, because we do have a biblical text,
mm-hmm,
with the Chronicles of restoring the Shekinah, the
Lord,
the Yeah. tent of David.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
As opposed to the tent of Jacob here.
Let me show you a couple of them that that pop up in the thoughts of Paul. Let's look at Genesis 16. You recognize this story. And then read Isaiah 54. Somebody put their finger into Isaiah 54. So what is Genesis 16 about? You betcha. Oh, that was good. And that relates to Isaiah 54, which says,
sing, O barren, you have not borne.
Mm-hmm.
Break forth into singing and cry aloud, you mm-hmm. have not labored with child.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful?
That's amazing.
And, I thought of, it's so beautiful about the world to come where the Lord rewards people who have given up home and family. And so part of the reason why I'm interested in these is simply because they sound like they're a little bit in the background of what Jesus is thinking about in terms of the world to come, or what is commonly believed about. What is it going to be like when God creates this new creation and the resurrection of the dead? Doesn't, Jesus says, well, women aren't going to have, they're people won't have children there. There will be no. I'm just guessing that that people had thought about the fact that even somehow in the world to come that the barren woman will have more children there. I don't know how that works. But look at Galatians 4. I don't have that exact page. Let me see. Do you can you guess where that might come up again in Paul's writing? Here we go.
Galatians 5.
For it's not the most pleasant of circumstances that it comes up, and the way Paul reads it isn't quite as lovely as that. It is 4:21-22. His lesson about Sarah and Hagar. Tell me, you who desire to be under the Torah, do you not listen to the Torah? And he's pulling out that verb. For it was written that Abraham had two sons, one by the slave woman, one by the free. And then, you know, and then he ultimately goes on. Hagar is at Mount Sinai, and she corresponds to Jerusalem, and her children are children of the slave woman. But, and then he quotes, look at that, he quotes Isaiah 54. Look, listen, O barren one who does not bear, more the children of the desolate woman. And so then he says, you believers, God-fearers, are the children of promise. So he's taking this very lovely promise and he's using it in his lesson. People have said, oh, it just shows his dislike for the Jewish people. You know, no, of course not. It's not anti-Semitic. It's not. But Paul pulls out that association between those two passages. It's not so much, like you said, it's not a lectionary, set lectionary that everybody has memorized, but there are certain passages that have become very popular and very well associated with others, and they come up in Paul's writing too. You can hear him speaking through some of those. So, yeah. Okay. I'm going to show you another one that kind of does that same thing. Exodus 34:27. Let's look at this one. What is that one about?
Exodus what?
34:27. Let me check to make sure I've got the right.
On Mount Sinai.
Yep.
You said 24.
34:27.
Okay.
Okay. And yes, it's about Moses coming down with the tablets from Mount Sinai, right?
The Lord said to Moses, write these words, for according to the tenor of these words, I have made a covenant with you and with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water, and he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. Good. And then, of course, the story, it goes on from there, and they're going to read the whole rest of the until the very next portion there. And it's about Moses coming down, and then the Israelites were messing around, and then he throws them down and goes, you know. And then he has this veil over his face, because his face is radiant, but he would remember that. Well, go to 1 Corinthians 7. That sound vaguely familiar? Oh, no, wait, not yet. Oops, I forgot.
Jeremiah.
We got to get to Jeremiah first. Let's go to Jeremiah first. Jeremiah 31, 32-39.
New covenant.
Right. Yes. You're hearing 31, and it starts at verse 32 through 39. Okay. A time is coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel. It will not be like the covenant I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to lead them from the land of Egypt, a covenant with which they broke, though I espoused them, declares the Lord. you can see how this is a the prophets are commenting on Moses breaking the tablets there, and a promise of a in the world to come, God will make a new covenant. It's a wonderful thing. And then when you look at 1 Corinthians 7, I believe. Let me see. Look that up. Okay. Do we see that?
1 Corinthians 7.
I think so. Let me. If somebody. I think so. I might not have the right one there. You might have to help me out with that. It's the one about talking about Moses wearing a veil over his face, but we
the unveiled face.
Yes.
Where is it?
Mm-hmm. Where is that? I think it's 2 Corinthians.
Like somewhere between 4 and 6.
I think so. I got the wrong reference. Sure. 2 Corinthians.
You did?
Okay.
Yeah,
2
Corinthians 3:18 is that all of us with unveiled faces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here we are. Okay. Where'd you go here? Okay. Here. Let's see. Okay. Here. Let's, yeah. And it's, again, Paul's kind of harsh here. I'm starting at verse 3, 2 Corinthians 3, 7. Now if the ministry of death, carved in letters on stone, came with such glory that the Israelites could not gaze at Moses' face because of its glory, which was being brought to an end, will not the ministry of the Spirit have even more glory? That's exactly what we're reading about in that portion, is the carving of letters on stone and then Moses coming down with his face veiled. Indeed, in this case, what once had glory has come to have no glory at all because the glory that has surpasses it. Or if what has what was being brought to an end came with glory, how much more what is permanent have glory? Since we have a hope, we are very bold, not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face so that the Israelites might not gaze at the outcome of what was being brought to an end, but with minds that are hardened when they read the old covenant. That same veil remains unlifted because only through Christ is it taken away. Yes, to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil lies over their hearts. But when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. Now the Lord is Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of God, are being just transformed in the image from one degree of glory to another. So you can hear Paul commenting through the prophets back to this passage in Exodus.
Where was he? Was he in the synagogue there?
It's in 2 Corinthians. So he's speaking to the Corinthian crowd.
They must have had training in the synagogue. I mean,
sure.
To follow those hymns.
Yeah, exactly. He's using fairly sophisticated midrash, yes.
Did you say you commented there?
He talks about,
he says ministry of death written and engraved on stone.
Yes, right.
So whatever you mean.
Yes,
by
he
that.
Does mention that. Yes, he does. Yes, he says. Okay. Not that.
There's also Hebrews 8.
Okay.
Referring to Jeremiah.
Okay.
31.
And that one's an extra harsh passage about the covenant being broken with them. Yes,
it does mention in verse 14 here.
Yeah.
The old VFAK. So
right.
You got that back in Jeremiah 31.
And verse 6, 2 Corinthians 3:6 says, talks about being ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. So there is that goes along with that.
I mean,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Right, but I mean, Hebrews 8 talks about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which old covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
And it's Jeremiah, so.
Yeah. So.
Come up and read it. Well, if it refers to. All made things according to the pattern shown in your mind.
Mm-hmm. So you can hear Paul preaching or just pulling out these well-known associations, and they seem to be kind of in the back of his mind because they're somewhat traditional, even though you can choose whichever passage you want, but you can imagine it's not everybody has that command of the Torah that they know exactly what other passage that they can use. I would imagine that these were kind of getting cemented. When you look at this reading list, you'll notice that there are, some of them have several different ones, and that's because in different synagogues there were different traditions. You'll also notice that a lot of them have a reference, and then it will say, like, Malachi 3:19f, question mark. And it's because it's only giving you the first couple words of that passage, and then the rest is not known, really. You can hear that it is, because all it has is the
so
name of it.
Those three words seem to be Malachi, but it's not for certain because they could have been another place.
It's that those three words definitely refer to Malachi 3:19, but the length of the passage is variable and according to what they want to do, and so we don't know exactly where people tended to stop if there was a definite line. They said the minimum.
That's how they marked where they stopped normally.
That's a good look. Good question.
By scene, that you found the same scene, or.
Part of the way they can tell was in the poetry of Yanai. Does that sound familiar? There were these liturgical poems that would take the Haftarah and the Torah and kind of weave them together. You can see what themes he's using. You can kind of tell where he stops. That's about the way they could tell. So, yes. I'm sorry?
What did you say about this one?
Okay, this one is from, well, I've got it right at the top here.
Where did they, where did they get it from?
Right. Yeah, that's right. Lots of, yes, exactly. There were, here, let me show you. I'll give you a different place where I can show you what they look like here. I'm trying not to make a big mess out of my papers and process.
Watch the time.
And I will watch my time. Okay. This is how. Yeah.
Speaking of your time.
Better hurry up. Okay. I won't kill you with that. Okay. I'm trying to think of. Well, let's see.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Well,
yes.
This is really fascinating. I'm looking forward to reading through these texts on my own time. How many spots have you found, or are you aware of where what we did with Galatians 4 or 2 Corinthians 3, where that sort of thing is very, sticks out?
Sticks out?
In the New Testament.
Well, the two that I just showed you were ones that had been published in journals.
Yeah.
Honestly, the more I look, the more I see it. A lot of places, I see it in Paul especially. Paul seems to be grabbing hold of themes.
Has there been a study centered on this yet?
Not really. And so people who maybe are studying Jesus in the early rabbinic midrash traditions, this would be a really good resource for, honestly, I thought if I could just put this in the hands of my graduate student friends so that you have this database. I had started studying through these, and I got to about here, and I realized this is a massive project. You need a community to work through this together, and some of these references and these lessons are more sophisticated than you really need somebody who has read the Midrash and some of the early stuff. And so, if you folks would like to join me in the project of, this is. if nothing else, I've given you a good reference that you can use in your future.
You know what you can do is you can put a wiki page and then ask people to find them. They can just throw them up there, just add them.
That's a great. What a good idea.
It's just good.
Yeah.
And then some of my classes for a master's degree, we read articles where professors are tracing patterns of exegesis that were shared.
Yes.
You see it in Hearing Qumran, you see it in the rabbis, But I don't really remember anyone referring to like the triangle cycle. This is kind of like, wow, this would be like a great
Great resource.
Instead of like pulling
And this is, and especially if these were common in the synagogue, and you know that Jesus was doing most of his preaching in the synagogue, you would expect that this is more representative of Jesus' exegesis, or at least what the world around him was reading. If it's not him, it's what the first century and second, you know, we're talking post-Jesus too. But that's, so Jesus is working with that as it's his background and then speaking into it. That's what I want to share and invite you to explore along with me to understand what they have been, they were doing when they studied their Bible together.
Now we can take the part of the prophetic passage that we read and try to reconstruct the
That's exactly, you could do that. Exactly. You could do that. That's exactly right. Yeah.